From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. The University of Iowa has just netted a $1 million grant to help gifted education researchers there study and advocate for academic acceleration. That is, advancing students at a rate that matches their potential. This hour, I'll be joined by Nick Colangelo, director of the UI's Bell and Blank Center. The center is at the forefront nationally of research to demonstrate the importance of having a national policy for academic acceleration. We'll also talk with UI senior Cody Schaefer from Wapello. He says acceleration saved him from boredom in elementary school and junior high. And also Mary Schmidt of the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association. Our discussion starts right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And this hour we discuss whether we're doing enough for gifted students in the state, in the country as a whole. A recent $1 million grant from the John Templeton Foundation will allow gifted education researchers at the University of Iowa to help students nationwide advance in school at a rate that matches their potential. The concept is called academic acceleration. Joining me first of all to discuss this whole area is Nicholas Colangelo. He's a faculty member in the College of Education at the University of Iowa, also director of the University of Iowa's Bell and Blank Center. We'll hear more about that in just a moment. In 2004, he was the lead author in a book that had a lot of attention, A Nation Deceived, the title of the book, How Schools Hold Back America's Brightest Students, co-author of that book. Nicholas Colangelo joins me here in Iowa Public Radio Studios in Iowa City. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, Ben. How you doing?
Great to have you with us again. And let's talk, first of all, about the Bell and Blank Center before we get to the grant. For those not familiar with it, what does your center do?
Okay. We became a center in 1988, and we are part of the College of Education and the University of Iowa. The center is a comprehensive unit. We focus on students who are advanced learners, often called gifted students, both in the academics and in the arts. And we have programs specifically for students that will come summer and sometimes on Saturdays. We also have a comprehensive program of working with teachers so that they can better deliver curriculum to advanced learners in their own schools. And, of course, we do research since we're part of the university, and we help with policy guidelines to school districts. We started off working only with Iowa in 1988, but as the years have gone on, we're clearly now an international center. We serve students and teachers around the nation as well as around the world.
Mm-hmm. How unique is this center in the United States, in the world?
Well, we are unique in that we are comprehensive, we're international. There are several other centers in the United States. There's one at Northwestern, one at Johns Hopkins. But I would say that what makes us unique is our international work as well as just the comprehensive work that we do. And over the last several years, we have become very well known for our research and advocacy on acceleration.
Mm-hmm. So when students come, they're coming from perhaps around the state, but also outside of the state to the summer camps you mentioned?
Correct. Some of our programs, depending on the funding, are limited to Iowa students because that's still home base for us, and we will always take care of our own students and teachers. But our programs are open to students around the United States.
Since its inception, how many students have been served by the Bell and Blank Center?
Good question. Do you want me to go down the names?
Just a number, a round ballpark figure would be great.
We've probably had well over 10,000 students through our summer programs and Saturday programs, and that's probably a very conservative estimate. But that gives you an idea that, you know, we clearly have touched a lot of families and a lot of schools.
Okay. A lot of achievement in the 20-plus years of existence of the center. Now, just announced this month a $1 million grant for the center from the John Templeton Foundation. How will this $1 million be put to use?
Okay. What this grant does is it allows us to continue our research and policy work on acceleration. It is specific to that as an intervention on behalf of high-ability students. And when I say acceleration, what I'm talking about are those strategies that help a student progress through an educational program at rates faster or at ages younger than what you normally would expect. essentially, when we talk about acceleration, it's allowing students to move based on their readiness to learn and their motivation rather than their age or grade.
Mm-hmm. So this is this would be a whole new type of thinking about the student and what the student can achieve. And does this go back to elementary? Does it start in junior high? Where do we jump in a student's development?
Well, we clearly start as early as the elementary, and it's also work in terms of pre-kindergarten as well. So we're talking about a pre-K all the way through end of senior year in high school. What makes this grant also unique is that we have known about acceleration for a number of years, and there's been research on it, but there's never been a center that is focused solely on acceleration so we can get out the best information. And Ben, acceleration is one of those interesting interventions in American education where we have considerable research over the last 60-plus years that says, and the research is robust and consistent, that says acceleration for students who are ready and for students who are motivated is excellent, hands down, excellent intervention. Yet the general attitude by the public and by educators has been considerably more hesitant about doing that. And so one of the real tasks, not only of this grant, but the work of the Bell and Blank Center, has to close that gap between what we know and kind of people's attitudes.
So you mentioned the general public, but also educators, and I assume you're speaking of misconceptions that this data, or myths that this data explodes. What would be a typical myth or two you want to correct here?
A typical myth is that, if a student is accelerated, that you're pushing them and you're depriving them of a certain amount of just developmental time, or that perhaps students can handle advanced material cognitively, but that socially they can't adjust to it. And, I understand all these things, both as an educator, and as a parent. But what people need to realize is that those myths are exactly that myth. In terms of what the research shows is that it is really very rare. Can't say it never happens, but it's very, very rare that when students who are ready and motivated are given the opportunity to accelerate, the adjustment tends to be very, very positive. And so it's a very rare case when it doesn't work out. But if your attitude is negative, that rare case is going to stand out for you.
So do you also, as a part of the criteria, look at the social development of the child?
Yeah. Absolutely. And what we look at, there are two main categories of acceleration. One is what we call the content-based. And what that one does, if I can just put it into everyday language, the child remains with age group, but the curriculum moves. So, for instance, advanced placement is a good example of this. Okay? You can be an 11th grader, and if you're taking advanced placement course, that's college level. So you're taking something you normally wouldn't get, college level work.
In your own high school.
Right, in your own high school, but you remain with 11th graders, and then eventually you'll stay with that group and you graduate high school and so forth. But you're taking college level work. The same thing is if you were a fourth grade girl taking fifth grade math, but then you come back to fourth grade for everything else and so forth. The other form of acceleration in the category is grade-based, and that's the one that probably most people stereotypically think about acceleration. And this is when the child actually moves. So a grade skip is a classic example, which means that it was determined that, you're a fourth grade boy, that you basically know the fifth grade curriculum. There isn't much for you to be gained, so that you would be grade skipped to sixth grade. Now, in that case, it doesn't make sense to only look at the academic ability. You also have to look at the social strengths because you've got to be able to adjust to the new environment and so forth. And just what does it mean to be a little bit younger than everybody else? But when we take a comprehensive look at that, grade skips, early entrance to college, so forth, all have very, very consistent evidence that those are positive moves.
Nicholas Colangelo is the director of the Bell and Blank Center at the University of Iowa, the recipient of recently announced of a $1 million grant, a new grant for the center from the John Templeton Foundation. Talking about academic acceleration this hour, we want to talk in a few minutes about whether it would be make sense, as the Bell and Blank Center advocates, to have a national policy on this across the country. But first of all, I want to introduce Cody Schaefer, a senior at the University of Iowa. He's a political science major who grew up in Wapello, Iowa. Good afternoon, Cody.
Good afternoon, Ben. Thanks for having me.
You are quoted as saying that academic acceleration saved you. Take us back to your academics at Wapello and how the Bell and Blank Center entered your life.
I would absolutely say that acceleration saved me. And going back to what Dr. Colangelo was talking about with curriculum-based acceleration versus full-grade acceleration, all through elementary school, I remember being pulled out of classes and taken to a talented and gifted room where I could work on logic puzzles and other things. So I would do like half-time in class and half-time out of class. Because it generally, I latched onto ideas faster than my classmates, so spending 4 hours on a math problem rather than, you know, the 1 hour that it took me to complete a unit was getting kind of pointless. So my mom definitely advocated for me a lot and got me all these extra little things that I could do. And then once I reached middle school, they moved me a full grade ahead in math, so I started high school algebra once I reached middle school instead of doing the 2 years of middle school math.
What was it like, your mindset, when you were in class before the acceleration? What would you do with the extra capacity you had?
Oh, I absolutely got bored. There was not a lot to keep me entertained. Like, using math as an example, I would, you know, latch on to this new idea really quickly and go through an entire unit because I was interested in it. And then at the end of the unit, I'm told that I have to wait 2 more weeks while everyone else finishes, and I'm left with nothing to do. So I would, you know, I remember spending a lot of time in the library and reading other books and learning other things on my own to try and compensate for the boredom.
Did this lead to somewhat of a disconnect in your peer group, even though you were in the same classroom much of the time?
Absolutely. I did feel disengaged, not only because I was disengaged from the curriculum, but like, as my peers were learning at a slower rate than I was kind of getting picked on and singled out as that, you know, that kid who finished early and,
right,
you know, the nerdy kid, whatever people felt like calling me that day. And it even came out with some of my teachers sometimes, because I would always, like, ask more. I'd want to know more, and I would keep asking the question, why? Like, why is it that
way? And they said, knock it off. We want to go out to recess, Cody.
Right. It's just, it was seen more as a problem with authority than with a problem with the way that academics was being delivered to me as a student.
Okay, very good. We want to continue our conversation with Cody Schaefer, University of Iowa senior political science major. He has benefited from academic acceleration. That's a topic of our program today. Also with us, Nicholas Colangelo, faculty member at the University of Iowa College of Education, director of the Bell and Blank Center. And we want to further this conversation about academic acceleration when we come back. Also welcoming Mary Schmidt, president-elect of the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association. Want to include you on this conversation. Do you know a student who has benefited from academic acceleration? What is your view? Do students, should they be progressed faster if they are capable of more? Or should they enjoy their childhood, as some might say? There may be benefits for that. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just 1 minute. The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about academic acceleration this hour. Let's talk to again to Cody Schaefer, University of Iowa senior, political science major from Wapello, was accelerated in Wapello, and also got in touch and has been a part of the Bell and Blank Center's programs for many years now. So you were accelerated also to the point of coming to Iowa City, to the center, to take part in a summer camp of sorts?
Yeah, absolutely. I always say that the first thing that really saved me, my first life raft, was my talented and gifted coordinator, Mrs. Kepper, who came to me in seventh grade and said, there's this great program, and I think that you'd really love it, and I've nominated you for social sciences, and you need to fill out this application and write an essay about why you want to go. And I remember coming here the summer of 2001, and being ridiculously nervous, but I took a class in social sciences called The Anatomy of a Conspiracy every day for 6 hours a day for 2 weeks, and it was the most fantastic 2 weeks of my life. And
what was different about it than being in a class of peers back in Wapello?
The curriculum for this type of course was made for students like me. Like, it was fast and it was all day and there were a million things to learn and explore and go off on. And, you know, I wasn't just being held up in the routine of some preformed curriculum. that's designed to supposedly encompass everyone in an age range. Like, I was facing curriculum that was really made for me for the first time with peers who were able to travel along that pathway with me, and that was a truly unique experience.
Interesting. I want to introduce Mary Schmidt to our conversation, president-elect of the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association. Mary joins us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Good afternoon to you, Mary.
Good afternoon, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on our program, hearing the story of Cody Schaefer there, where he has obviously benefited from academic acceleration. How are schools in Iowa currently handling academic acceleration?
Well, I think what we notice across the state is that implementation of acceleration is really uneven at best. It ranges all the way from schools that have very developed policies, and along with those policies, they have very specific procedures for implementing acceleration. Some schools have only the procedure but have not yet entered acceleration into the policy form. And we go all the way to those schools that really don't embrace acceleration, and I think a lot of that goes back to what Dr. Colangelo mentioned about the attitudes and the myths people embrace, which are largely due to a shortage of information about the benefits of this particular intervention.
So you have superintendents of school districts in Iowa who will hold back, dig in their heels and say, no, that's not what we're going to do here.
Well, we have heard that across the state. I serve as the gifted education consultant at Heartland AEA, and I've gotten information and been in conversation with my colleagues in other AEAs across the state, and there are some districts that just pretty much take the stance, you know, we don't do that here.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say I believe it's largely due to a lack of information.
Mm-hmm. If this empirical data was presented, the studies that Nicholas Colangelo was mentioning here, the data is on your side. It's a matter of just raising awareness.
Oh, absolutely. And I would have to say that since the publication of A Nation Deceived, it's a tool we've been able to use, and school districts' willingness to accelerate students and to look more closely at a clearly defined procedure has definitely been on the upswing. We've seen great strides and a lot of improvement in that area.
Now, Cody Schaefer, in your case, when we're looking back just a few years, was it difficult? Was there any resistance in the Wapello school system for you to being put on an accelerated path?
When it came to mathematics, it was a little bit easier because there was a group of five of us that were fighting for the same thing, and our parents came together and asked the school to do that, to accelerate us to the algebra level, and the school did with little reluctance, agree to do that because it was so easily fit into our scheduling. When it came to the social sciences and social studies where I really excelled and where I really needed acceleration, the school did just say no, and they drug their heels because they didn't have anything else to offer me. So my mom worked independently with my teacher, who developed a separate set of curriculum for me to do while I was in social studies with him throughout high school.
So, Nicholas Colangelo, what are we talking about here when we take Cody's case here and what you're proposing as a furthering of academic acceleration? Where do we go from here that you think would benefit gifted students?
What Mary said is absolutely true, and that is that I think in part since the publication Nation Deceived that more and more school districts and school personnel are getting familiar with the research and realizes that, you know, myths are clearly that myths. So we have movement on that, but then the next thing that needs to happen is that we need to start having written policy and procedures, because when you write something down, then you make it legitimate. You let the parents, you let everyone know that we can do this, and here are the procedures to do it. One of the things that I regret the most right now in terms of what's happening with acceleration is that there are a number of students, both Iowa and outside of Iowa, who are ready for acceleration, but it's whether they get it or not is going to be up to the savvy of their parents and how hard the parents are willing to work. And that's just an equity issue, that students should have an equitable chance at opportunities, and it should not be dependent on the resources or the savviness of their parents. And so without written policies, it's much more of a hit and miss proposition. And so that's what we're focusing on with this new grant, is to help states, help school districts put into writing policies that I think will really help their students. And as I said, it both makes it legitimate, but the important thing is that it makes it equitable.
So Mary, what is it, to follow up on that, what is the role of the parent here? We have not an adult here in these cases. The parents surely have a role in the decision of acceleration.
Oh, absolutely. I believe they do. And parents are oftentimes the most powerful advocates. Teachers of gifted in a school can advocate for acceleration or other programming options for a student. But what really gets attention is when the parent steps in, and there's great power in groups of parents who come together to advocate for a given issue. But I think also we need to think about how parents can be educated. For example, I had a conversation just this week with a parent who said, my daughter is 10 and the school wants to accelerate her in math, but I just don't know about this because mm-hmm. what if she hasn't learned what she needs to learn? What if this isn't the right thing? And she said, who should I talk to and what should I ask?
And what was your answer?
Well, my answer was, you've already asked a really good question, and that is, how do I know this is right for my daughter and that she won't be missing important concepts in math? And typically those decisions to accelerate are made very carefully with lots of data to show that there will not be significant gaps in a student's learning. And for whole grade acceleration, the Iowa Acceleration Scale is a very powerful tool that I personally am seeing more and more schools using.
Tell us about that, the Iowa Acceleration Scale.
Well, Dr. Colangelo can probably speak to it more eloquently.
I'm one of the authors of the Iowa Acceleration Scale.
Pardon me.
It's okay. And, it is part of the work of the Bell and Blank Center. And essentially what it is it's a guidance instrument to help schools determine when a student is being considered for whole grade acceleration or grade skipping. Have you looked at all the different areas that are important, and have you given the weight? And so what it does is says, take a good look at the entire student, and then it helps you determine whether acceleration would be a very useful move or not. Mary brings up a good point. The issue with acceleration is no one forces you to do it. But if you're ready, we know that this can be good. And I have to go back to something, Ben, that you said, because I wanted disconnect the issue between enjoying your childhood versus acceleration.
I knew you were going to catch me on that. I misspoke there.
Absolutely. There is nothing more enjoyable than when a student is just feeling fulfilled and energetic about learning. There is nothing wonderful about a student feeling disengaged. And so the cornerstone of acceleration is that no one forces you to do it. But if you're ready for it, then we ought to have that opportunity.
We'll be back in just a few minutes to continue our conversation about academic acceleration with Nicholas Colangelo, director of the Bell and Blank Center at the University of Iowa, Cody Schaefer, a political science major at the University of Iowa who has been accelerated and had fun doing it from Wapello, Iowa, Mary Schmidt, president-elect of the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association. What is your opinion? What is your view on academic acceleration? Perhaps it's touched you, your life, your family. Are there drawbacks that haven't been mentioned on this program? We'd like you to join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. So glad you could join us over the noon hour for this edition as we're discussing whether we're doing enough for gifted students in the state, in the country. A recent $1 million grant from the John Templeton Foundation will allow gifted education researchers at the University of Iowa to help students nationwide advance in school at a rate that matches their potential, a concept called academic acceleration. And we have the director of the Bell and Blank Center at the University of Iowa, that center, the recipient of this latest grant, Nicholas Colangelo, a faculty member at the College of Education. He is also the lead author in a book from 2004, A Nation Deceived, How Schools Hold Back America's Brightest Students. He's with us. The center is at the forefront nationally of the research to demonstrate the importance of having a national policy, not a patchwork, a national policy for academic acceleration. And Cody Schaefer with us as well, a senior at the University of Iowa, science major from political science major from Wapello, Iowa, a student who, as we heard in the first half hour, benefited tremendously from being accelerated and, in fact, entered college 1 year early at the age of 17. Mary Schmidt in Des Moines, president-elect of the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association. We'd like to hear from you this half hour, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. A lot of people want to get in on this conversation, so I think we'll go right to the callers. In West Des Moines, Karen has been waiting. Hi, Karen.
Yes. I just want to say how supportive I am and how important I think the work of supporting parents and teaching them how to advocate when the school system doesn't necessarily support that. In our own situation, it was the classroom teacher and the building principal who were advocating for whole grade acceleration, and it was the TAG coordinator who was not in favor of doing this and reluctantly, you know, pretty much gave us the impression that this was going to fail, but oh well.
What were the reasons behind the resistance?
She tested our child, who was in second grade at the time. Although I should say we moved here from another state who had a different starting time for going to kindergarten. In our previous state, she would have gone to kindergarten because her birthday was in the fall, but it was before their deadline. When we moved here, we found out that the deadline was in December. And so she was not able to start kindergarten. By the time, it was pretty clear to the first grade teacher and the second grade teacher then, who definitely said and got the building principal involved. But we as parents were reluctant to push this until the school, at least some advocates at the school, got behind this because we thought, you know, we're going to be perceived as the pushy West Des Moines parents.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, and we really did hang back and wait for them to say, we need to talk to you. We think she doesn't belong here in this class. She needs to go another grade at least ahead.
Was that being exhibited in her behavior, her level of satisfaction, her happiness in school, as we heard from Cody?
Actually, she was just an incredibly social, very advanced socially as well as academically. And I think the TAG coordinator thought that her incredible outgoing skills were, from near as I can remember, a sign of, you know, not being able to focus as clearly as she thought she needed to focus, that she was a bit flighty. And in fact, she is to this day in her 30s, a person who goes around the room and, you know, is very outward and a very social person. I just want you to know how much I appreciate the opportunity for other parents to have advocates behind them.
Thank you very much, Karen from West Des Moines. Mary Schmidt, how many stories like this do you hear in your work as with the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association across Iowa, where the advocacy is really some work for the parents, and they have to find their allies and talk to the people who have some resistance? Mary Schmidt in Des Moines?
Yes, I think that happens a lot. And one comment I would have about that is that I think one piece of education that needs to happen for particularly folks in schools, we see a lot the belief that if a child is gifted or advanced, we would expect that means they are equally capable in all areas, their social development is advanced, their behavior is impeccable, that in all ways they are the quote-unquote perfect child. And where the education needs to come in is in the understanding that these very capable children often have uneven profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So they, in their social development, they may be in one place, in their cognitive development, in a particular subject area, they may be in another place altogether.
So is the object then in acceleration to even out the unevenness or to just address the accelerated areas and further those areas? Nicholas Colangelo.
Well, it can be one of both. If the child is excellent in math, it makes no sense to grade skip. what makes the most sense is to say you're a fourth grader, you're excellent in math, you take math with the fifth or sixth graders, but then you come back to fourth graders for everything else. And that's what we call the single subject acceleration, and probably meets a lot of needs, especially math. But if a child is socially ready and is strong in all areas and seems it will benefit, she or he will benefit much more by a grade skip, that's what makes sense. But the important thing is to assess the readiness, to make sure you've looked at everything, because acceleration, and I'll say it a million times, should never be forced on anyone. It should be something that a child is ready for, wants, and the evidence is there to support it. You can have a lot of very bright kids who are clearly not going to benefit from acceleration. So it is a situation that we need to take a look at. What are the strengths of the child before we make these decisions?
Back to our phones. Janelle in Cedar Rapids. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Exchange, Janelle.
Hi, thank you.
Go ahead. Yes, you're on the air. Welcome.
I had a comment. I think it's great that you guys are really looking at this academic acceleration program. I was a first grader in a very, very small town here in eastern Iowa, and lucky for me, I had a grandmother that was a teacher. So I knew how to read before I went to kindergarten. I was doing progressive math before I went to kindergarten. Now, this was back in the 70s, so I mean, this has been a very long time ago. But it was really socially very, very hard for me because I went up an entire grade. So in first grade, I went up to second grade. And the kids that I had just left thought, oh, look at the smart kid. And the kids that I had just joined thought, oh, what is she doing here? You know, so I wrestled with that, frankly, for most of my school career, because even in high school, and because I had a later birthday in the year, I was taking driver's ed with kids that were 2 to 3 grades younger than I was. So it was, you know, it was just something that I wrestled with constantly. Now I have a daughter who's in the gifted and talented program, and I really appreciate how much work has been done. But I do want to stress that that can be incredibly socially difficult for people, especially at such a young age.
Great point, Janelle. So, Mary Schmidt, let me turn to you and ask, what are the things that have been done since the 1970s to address the concerns, the awkwardness, if I might say so, that Janelle experienced in leaping a grade?
Well, one of the things that's built into the conversation and the child study team approach in the Iowa Acceleration Scale is that the receiving teacher is part of the conversation, and there is a transition plan. And I think a skilled teacher can do a lot to alleviate some of those situations. As an example, one of my own students, as an eighth grader, went to the high school for advanced math, pre-calculus. And there was a particular student in this class who continually gave the eighth grader a hard time, and the teacher intervened and took that junior out into the hall and said, look, how would you like it? And, you know, that really brought an end to the situation, and this young man was, the eighth grader, was actually embraced by this class. They all wanted him to help because he was very bright.
So is this the case where the receiving teacher, as you named that person, would then on the first day when Janelle is accelerated, for instance, would say something in the class in reference to her gifts? Or on an individual basis, as you just mentioned?
Well, I think that depends on the child and the situation. And I guess in my own experience, I would probably be reluctant to call undue attention to that child.
Cody Schaefer, you've been in the experience of being accelerated. That could be a potentially embarrassing situation to be on your first day of class. You're nervous anyway. And then all of a sudden everybody says, these older kids look at you and you're pointed out as an accelerated student. Boy, but don't need that kind of attention, probably.
You know, I remember one situation specifically, and it was my junior year of high school when I decided and applied to the National Academy program here at the University of Iowa to skip my senior year, and I had to take senior government and economics in order to graduate my high school, so I went in a grade early, and I remember getting a lot of weird looks and some hesitation from the actual seniors who were in the class, and it lasted over the entire semester, and actually, I didn't get a lot of flack from the other students, but I did get some kind of really sidestepped comments from their parents during high school award night when I, as a junior, won the Outstanding Student Award for both of those classes above any of their students, and it got a little hostile, and I still remember some parents actually being kind of negative toward me for...
And any specific quotes you remember from that time?
Like, you know, being in that class wasn't my place, and I was stealing the sunshine of their students, like, From the actual seniors who were in the class.
Okay. Good. So if you've been imported, you'd been imported from another planet and didn't
right,
really belong there.
Right. But
like
I mean, I definitely found it more amusing than anything. So.
Okay. Very good. Janelle, thank you very much for that point of view, calling from Cedar Rapids. Janelle, thank you.
Thank you.
This is an email from an anonymous email written to our show. I am a gifted, talented coordinator for a K-12 public school in eastern Iowa. For the past 2 years, our high school has offered community college coursework for both juniors and seniors. While I see many of the reasons for pushing kids out the door, more choices, lower costs by not having to hire more staff, guaranteed college credit for state schools, etc., I also hear the feedback from our brightest kids. The valedictorian of last year's class told me that he learned much more from his junior year advanced placement English class than he did during his senior year freshman English course at the local community college. I have to be very careful how I answer questions when students and their parents ask me, "What should I do?" I really think my administration wants to kill all AP classes and ship everyone out to the community college. How do I handle this situation, this political hot potato, says our anonymous emailer. Nicholas Colangelo, you want to take that first?
Okay. I'll make absolutely clear that I am in favor of having AP classes in Iowa schools. I think our students deserve these opportunities. They've proven themselves as worthwhile academic classes, and doing well on the AP national exam is one of the best indicators that you are clearly ready for college and university. And I think anyone who doesn't want to give students a chance to use AP is really not helping in terms of high-ability students. Going to a community college and so forth, no problems with that. That should be one of the options. But it should not be in any way at the expense of AP because it is not one and the same.
Cody, you wanted to chime in here.
I had a little bit of a run-in with the community college thing when I was making my decision of what to do at the end of my high school career, and that was something that was offered to me as part of my senior year. But also, sometimes for places like Iowa, it's not always even a legitimate option because I had to incur the cost of driving 45 minutes a day from my hometown and my school district each way to take one or two classes at the community college. And so while I think for students who are close to community colleges and have the resources to do that, I think it's a great idea. I feel like I would have benefited more if there were AP classes in my high school. And that's ultimately what led me to make the decision to come to the University of Iowa full time a year early.
Nicholas Colangelo.
Since this came up, in all fairness, in case people don't know, but Bell and Blank Center, in collaboration with the Iowa Department of Education, offers an AP online academy. And as of today, any high school student in Iowa can take an AP course with school approval through the online academies. So these options are out there. I'm not sure that people always realize that, but I want that to be clear since this is an important service to the students of Iowa.
Let me ask you a couple more questions about the center as our hour is getting away from us. We want to get back to callers, but how do people contact the Bell and Blank Center, the website?
We have a website, Bell and Blank Center. Anything on acceleration, you can go to www.accelerationinstitute.org. And our information on acceleration and consultation is all at no cost. And so we have a lot of information and a lot of people on staff who can really help school people and parents.
So it shouldn't be the case that someone out there, maybe in a rural area, a parent saying, I think we've got an accelerated student here, a student potentially for that. Cost should be no worry.
In terms of getting information and service from us, you're absolutely right. No worry. There is no reason, if you are thinking that your son or daughter may be a good candidate for acceleration, to at least not get more information. We have it now.
Okay. Very good. Let's go back to our phones. Scott in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I just wanted to say my son did academic acceleration this year from second to third grade, and his teacher recommended it to us shortly after the school year started, and we were both kind of taken aback, weren't sure about it, and we did the Iowa acceleration scale, and it has been the best thing for my son. He isn't upset about little silly things that we normally thought of that go on at school. He's adjusted socially. Any type of gaps that were there, we just had his last conference, they don't seem to be evident at all, and it's just been the best move for our son.
That's interesting. So sometimes the perceptions of the adults, of the parents, projecting them on the children is just off the mark.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an educator, and I had always thought we held him back a year. He did a half-day kindergarten, then all-day kindergarten, and I wouldn't have changed that. I saw a lot of growth in him from that, but just sometime at the end of his kindergarten year, the reading took off, and we always knew he was a strong reader, and we learned he's strong in math and everything, too, from the Iowa Acceleration Scale. It's just been a great experience for all of us.
Scott, thank you for your call, calling from Cedar Rapids, an email from Robert in Sioux City. I think this is a great conversation, writes Robert, and I support academic acceleration. But could your guests answer the question, what student wouldn't benefit from an individually tailored program from acceleration? Nicholas Colangelo.
A student wouldn't benefit because acceleration is always about more advanced material and faster pace. So if a student is not ready for the next level of math or the next level of reading, there is nothing to be gained by putting that student in a situation where he or she can't succeed. So acceleration doesn't try to minimize your strength. It really tries to enhance them. And you know, there are many students in fifth grade where the fifth grade math level is absolutely appropriate, and there's no reason to put them in a level that they're not ready for, nor are they motivated for.
How often do you have a case where the parents are motivated, the educators surrounding the parents in the school system are motivated, the child is showing a lot of hesitancy? Do you try to win over the child, lobby the child, or do you just let it sit for a while?
No. One of our golden rules is if the child doesn't want to be accelerated, listen to that, because the purpose of acceleration is not punishment. It's not to make you pay a price for having high ability. It's really to give you a chance to flourish. And in those cases, we say, you know, wait. Mm-hmm. Maybe in another year your child will feel differently about this and so forth. The other part that, Ben, you haven't asked is there are times when I think parents think that their child is really ready for acceleration, will benefit, and in a team discussion, that really isn't so. And then it's our job to work with those parents to say, you know, what you want is what's best for your child.
Right.
And this program won't be it, but this one will. So absolutely, even though we've been very positive about acceleration, this program, it is not something that will be a benefit to all students out there.
Let's fit in a couple more calls. Chrissy has been waiting in Moline, Illinois. Chrissy, are you still there?
Yes.
Please, go ahead. We've got a few minutes left of the program. What's on your mind on this topic?
I just wanted to say my daughter's in second grade in Moline Schools, and they have a whole second grade class that's an accelerated class. So they don't necessarily skip a grade, but the whole class does accelerated learning. Like right now they're in third grade reading and third grade math.
Hmm.
So I think that helps her because all the kids are
How does that happen, an entire class?
That's no problem at all. Actually, at the high school level, that's what an AP class should be, is always an accelerated class. So if they're getting the faster pace, if they're getting the more advanced material, no problem. The only issue I would bring up is if they're getting the third grade work now, then next year they should be getting fourth grade work, assuming they're ready. So we've got to make sure that then you continue the system.
Okay, very good. Chrissy in Moline, Illinois. Let's go across the river to Bettendorf. Bob, are you there?
Yes. I wonder if there are any legal impediments to the wonderful program that has been outlined here. I talked to Governor Vilsack a few years back, and I suggested that the great James Van Allen could teach a course in gifted physics students at Iowa City High School. He said that under Iowa law, that would be illegal.
Okay, Bob, not much time left. We'll get an answer to that and then wrap up here. Any legal things we have to think about?
For the most part, there aren't legal issues. It's more issues of spirit and willingness. The one legal issue that does come into play is that many states have legislation that forbids a student to start kindergarten or start school before a certain birthday. And so that's probably the closest thing that I know to that there are some legal possibilities. But beyond that, I don't know of any laws that do not allow the other forms.
I wanted to close the hour with some closing comments from our guests. In terms of where we want to be in the future, how we want to move this along if we determine that academic acceleration is good, and we have a lot of myths out there that are in conflict with the empirical data that has been gathered at the Bell and Blank Center and other places. Mary Schmidt, let me start with you. Where would you like us to be in 5 years that we aren't now?
I think we would reach the ideal when each and every child in our school system has the educational program that meets the child where he or she is, and in terms of readiness, in terms of social and emotional concerns, in just addressing that whole child and making sure that we give each child the right educational opportunities so they can continue to grow and, to use Dr. Colangelo's word, flourish.
Nicholas Colangelo, your vision when you look 5 years down the road?
When you call me back on this radio station 5 years from now, what I would like to see is that every school district across the nation has written policies that give students in their district an opportunity to accelerate. What I really think the next thing that needs to happen is that acceleration should not be hit and miss, should not be on the resources of the parents, but should be on the ability and readiness of the student. And I think that will happen with written policies and procedures.
Nicholas Colangelo, thank you very much. Cody Schaefer, very quickly before we go, where do you want to be in 5 years with your accelerated education?
Hopefully getting a PhD. But
in political science?
Public policy.
In public policy. Well, good luck with that career. Thank you for sharing your academic career thus far with us. Thanks to Nicholas Colangelo, director of the Bell and Blank Center at the University of Iowa. Mary Schmidt, president-elect of the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association. Thank you all so much for making our conversation. Of course, thanks to the many callers and emailers we had. We couldn't get all your comments in. Sorry about that. The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins, our producer assistant today, Rosalind Sixby. Technical support also from Dennis Reese. Podcasting and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us.